Now a crimson ball of light sparkles and revolves. It stops, revealing a crystalline S-shape. Words fly in. Screen jams, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. Now in space, a gleaming light outlines the crescent profile of a planet. The light passes behind a logo. Davis Films, Impact Canada. Now in a cloudy night sky, light flares and silhouettes a logo. Silvery words glint, Constantine Film. Nighttime. Aerial views show a densely packed city grid of high-rises and bright lights. Titles, Screen Gems, Constantine Film, Davis Films, Impact Pictures present a Constantine Film, Davis Films, Impact Pictures production. Electrified signs and jumbo screens show colorful advertisements. As vehicles crisscross the busy Tokyo intersection, a pedestrian waits under an umbrella. A film by Paul W.S. Anderson, Mila Jovovich, Ali Larter. A traffic light turns red. As many umbrella-toting pedestrians follow the crosswalk, the action drops into slow motion. Metallic letters fly in and spell out Resident Evil Afterlife. As rain pelts the asphalt, one pedestrian stands motionless in the downpour. Crimson snakeskin stilettos give way to slender legs clad in black and gray striped nylons. Our view follows the vertical stripes upward. Kim Coates, Sean Roberts, Sergio Perez Mancheta, Spencer Locke, with Boris Kojo and Wentworth Miller. The young woman's hands hang limply just above the hem of her black and blue mini dress. An aerial view shows the rain drenching her raven hair. Colorful umbrella tops pass by her on the wide white-painted crosswalk. A silver-studded black leather shoulder bag hangs on the woman's hip, and the bodice of her mini dress is sleeveless. Her drenched hair frames her sad porcelain face and rosebud lips. Canadian casting by Robin D. Cook, CSA. UK casting by Suzanne M. Smith, CDG. Costume designer Denise Cronenberg. Production designer Arv Graywall. Director of Photography Glenn McPherson, ASC-CSC. Edited by Niven Howie. Visual effects supervisor Dennis Berardi. Music by Tom and Andy. A fleeting view through a clear umbrella shows the woman's vacant, downcast expression. In the crowd, a pudgy middle-aged businessman strides toward her under a black umbrella. Based upon Capcom's video game Resident Evil, associate producer Hiroyuki Kobayashi, executive producer Victor Hadida, executive producer Martin Moskowitz, produced by Bernd Eichinger, Samuel Hadida. The young woman slowly turns, raindrops tumbling past her sullen gaze. She peers out the corner of her eye, glowering. Water trickles off her nose and chin. Produced by Don Carmody. Produced by Robert Culzer. Produced by Jeremy Bolt, Paul W.S. Anderson. A shadow passes over her, shading her skin a dull gray. The businessman draws closer, studying her quizzically. She tips her head back and snarls. The young woman pounces, biting his neck. Both topple and he spits blood. As she feeds on him, pedestrians scramble off the crosswalk. Our view withdraws skyward. Tokyo's bright city lights gleam in complex patterns like capillaries. Blackouts spread from the central point, plunging the expansive metropolitan grid into darkness. Misty clouds veil our ascending view as the blackouts engulf all of the Japanese islands, then Asia. Written and directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. Seen from outer space, Earth looms before us, its patchy atmosphere shrouding only darkness.
My name is Alice. I worked for the Umbrella Corporation in a secret laboratory developing experimental viral weaponry. There was an incident, a virus escaped. Everybody died. Trouble was, they didn't stay dead. This was the start of an apocalypse that would sweep the entire world. The men responsible for this disaster took refuge underground and continued to experiment with the deadly T-virus. They felt secure in their high-tech fortress. But they were wrong.
Nighttime. We spiral back down into the darkened city. Words appear 4 years later. At the intersection, debris, abandoned vehicles, and several dead bodies litter the pavement and striped crosswalk. A ghoulish woman staggers stiffly past, her hair matted and her face dirty. She collapses as a car window shatters behind her. Nearby, a sniper ejects a cartridge from his rifle and radios in. Subtitles: Biohazard terminated. Central Shibuya, confirm. His night vision scope shows the terminated creature. I confirm. A sniper on a high-rise balcony gives a thumbs up. Nice shooting. And I lead 3-1. The night is young. Plenty more fish in the... Toshi, are you okay? The first sniper squints. Toshi, where are you? A shadow envelops him. His legs kick against a force dragging him away from his rifle. Now our view descends alongside the building, and the city shows us a 3D computer schematic. Descending below street level, we observe a huge underground structure. It has a massive cylindrical hub and spoke-like arms that connect to 8 subterranean towers. Umbrella Corporation Headquarters, Tokyo. Our view darts inside down an atrium, passing hundreds of levels, and reaches a staircase. The 3D model becomes a real staircase. Armed guards sprint up it. Near the atrium's bottom, 2 control room gantries stand high off the floor, oval in shape. Upon each, technicians man computer stations, and an octagonal table painted with red and white wedges forms a corporate logo that vaguely resembles a peppermint candy. Subtitles: Sentry 3 respond. A technician faces a duty officer. We lost contact with another one. A fit Caucasian man arrives in a gray suit and sunglasses.
Report.
Sir, a half hour ago, we began to lose contact with some of our perimeter sentries.
How many have we lost?
All of them.
And you waited 30 minutes to tell me?
We thought it was a communications problem. I didn't want to disturb you.
Give me the surface gate. Hey.
A clear display screen shows a guard's face.
Sim.
This is Chairman Wesker.
Sir.
Report your situation.
Everything is quiet here.
No sign of intruders?
The guard spasms.
Otaka,
we have movement.
He spews blood.
Multiple targets.
Surface gate, identify targets. Repeat, identify targets.
Sir, elevator 2 is moving.
I want security at that main entrance now.
Now armed guards wearing body armor race through a motor pool of black SUVs. Running in twin lines toward the main doors, half the soldiers carry hefty guns, while the other half tote 4-foot-high riot shields. Reaching an industrial foyer, the guards wait behind the shields as they face 2 broad blast doors. Numbers above the door scroll down from 7 to 1. Behind the guards, a dark figure drops from an air shaft into the motor pool. In front of them, the doors glide apart. The undetected infiltrator, a sleek woman wearing 2 katana swords at her back, stands. The opening blast doors reveal an empty cargo elevator. The infiltrator steps into the light. It's Alice. As the gorgeous woman glares with icy blue eyes, a guard looks over his shoulder. Alice charges, flinging a trio of throwing stars that take out 3 guards. Alice draws her katanas and hacks her way through more men. Launching herself off a shield, she spins in midair and beheads 2 guards. Landing, she skewers 2 more. Others shoot at her. Alice dashes for cover, hiding behind a concrete pillar, then steps out using a dead guard as a human shield. Firing a gun from under his arm, she slays the guard shooting at her and drops the body. Another man fires on her. She jumps off a wounded guard's shoulder and runs along a wall. In slow motion, she twirls and the bullets chop off the end of her sword. She hurls it, and the broken blade skewers her attacker's head right through his helmet. He drops. Alice spins around and gazes down the body-strewn corridor. Another dozen guards aim at her from behind shields. Alice blinks and wills her pupils to dilate extremely. An energy surge rips through the floor like a wave, blasting bodies and concrete at the reinforcements. The parked SUVs explode. Smoke fills the air, clouding our view, then dissipates. Sparks rain down from an overhead light as other lights flicker. Mounds of debris cover the floor where the guard stood. Alice crosses the mangled area. Clad in a form-fitting black catsuit with a leather bustier, she draws closer to the company logo on the floor and looks around. More guards jog toward her between 2 rows of parked SUVs. Alice eyes them, her pupils dilating. Bullets rip through her chest from behind. She collapses. A guard stands from a crouch and nudges her high-heeled boot. 3 more Alices arrive.
Hey, boys.
The guards notice the clones.
Is that any way to treat a lady?
Two Alices fire submachine guns. The third wields katanas. One bullet comes at us in slow motion, appearing as big as an oil drum. Now on the control gantry, a screen shows an Alice clone as she shoots the camera, providing the security feed. Wesker frowns.
Tell security to flood the main entrance with nerve gas.
Sir, our men are still up there.
He shoots the duty officer in the head. The stun technicians gawk.
Any more questions?
They face their computers.
Intruders in sectors 1 through 5, 7 and 8.
Reports of gunfire in sectors 10 and 11.
The men glance upward, cowering.
Stay at your stations. All security protocols are now in full effect. Lock down all elevators. Seal all internal glass doors. And I want damage reports.
Now a guard shoots at an Alice clone as she dashes across a data center, returning fire. She nails him, then shoots another guard and hides behind a concrete pillar flanking a central aisle. A dozen guards fire at her from one end of the aisle. The clone nods to a second, hiding behind an adjacent pillar, and the women step into the aisle and shoot back. Several guards collapse, and the women take cover once again. The first shows a grenade and nods to the second, who holds a grenade of her own. They release the pins and fling them at the guards. As the men distractedly eye the explosives, the Alice clones cover themselves with gunfire, race toward plate glass windows, and leap through. They free fall down the atrium, firing upward at the data center. On the control gantry far beneath them, Wesker looks up and spots their form silhouetted by a fiery explosion. He and the technicians draw weapons. The clones launch grappling hooks, which lodge in the ceiling as they make their quick descent. Guards on catwalks fire at them, and the clones shoot back, killing them. Wesker shoots up at the clones from the control gantry. Firing back, the clones shoot his technicians, who crumple to the floor one by one. Wesker shoots one clone in the head. Nearing the control platform, her partner detaches from the cable and flips to the floor. She lands in a crouch and fires. Wesker takes cover as she slays the remaining technician. Dozens of guards arrive and the Alice clone shoots them calmly, dodging their shots with an acrobatic flip. Wesker shoots her in the back and she collapses. He fires a final shot into her limp form. Wesker stalks toward her. On the ground floor beneath them, another clone shoots several more guards. Yet another Alice attacks the other control gantry just beneath Wesker's. Wesker frowns and flips the clone he shot onto her back. Two grenades roll out of her hands. Wesker dives away. A flaming explosion billows up the atrium. The 3D computer schematic of the headquarters reappears. Sector after sector flashes red, and the scarlet strobing spreads throughout. A message warns intruder alert, facility breached. Data scrolls down, turning from blue to red. Now Wesker follows a corridor through a doorway to a towering hangar. A hulking Fletner, an airplane with twin rotors in place of wings, stands on a red and white umbrella logo in the center of the floor. Wesker strides toward it, pulling out a remote control and tapping a few buttons. The two halves of the cockpit's door open, the top lifting as the bottom descends, revealing stairs. Wesker climbs aboard. The Fletner's rotors spin. At the surface, on the Tokyo street, the striped crosswalk spreads open, revealing the hangar beneath it. Three Alice clones sprint into the hangar and open fire as the Fletner lifts off. The bullets ricochet off its armored body. Wesker eyes them calmly through a window. Six more clones arrive and all shoot at the plane. In the cockpit, Wesker smirks. The Fletner lifts out of the hangar and ascends past the derelict high rises at the surface. Its rotor assemblies swivel and it flies off horizontally. Wesker types on his remote control, which reads, "Purge facility, countdown started." He grins. Back in the hangar, a timer on the wall counts down.
Come on, move! Go! Go now! Everybody move!
Outside, a bubble-shaped blast swells from the Tokyo intersection. Drawing in city blocks like a black hole, it erases building after building. In the Fletner, Wesker jostles. The plane zooms off as the smoky energy orb engulfs the city.
Turbulence.
The sphere of energy roils violently, glowing as it blooms larger and larger. It flashes brighter, then sucks back into itself and vanishes, leaving behind a huge crater. In the Flettner, Wesker flicks an overhead switch. Behind him, an Alice clone steps into the long cabin aisle and creeps closer with a gun in her hand. She closes in on Wesker and holds her weapon to his temple. She whispers into his ear.
Any last words?
Wesker whips around and plunges a needle into her neck. A magnified view in Alice's bloodstream shows amber microbes released into her veins. They resemble ticks. Alice falls to her knees. Wesker stands over her.
How nice to finally meet the real you.
The syringe juts from Alice's neck.
Hurts, doesn't it? Well, that's just the start of the bad news. All those powers of yours? Speed, strength, accelerated healing? Well, you can kiss all those goodbye.
Alice removes the needle.
We'll be done.
The serum I've injected you with is neutralizing the T-cells within your body. Put simply, the Umbrella Corporation is taking back its property. You just didn't work out. So you're being recalled.
Alice rises and throws a punch. Grabbing her fist, Wesker bends her arm back, then kicks her. She drops. As she attacks again, Wesker blocks her. He punches her in the stomach, elbows her, then kicks her down the cabin. She lies helplessly on the ground.
I'm what you used to be.
He aims a gun.
Only better.
Please wait.
Last words.
Alice lifts her head.
Thank you.
For killing you.
She meets his gaze.
For making me human again.
She looks away, her shoulders heaving.
Pull up. Terrain.
Turning to the cockpit, Wesker sees the plane heading toward a mountain. The aircraft noses into us. Flames erupt and fragmented windshield glass flies toward our eyes. The scene freezes in time. Our view rounds past a fire cloud and shows the aircraft interior, where Wesker is suspended in the air just aft of the cockpit. In the cabin, Alice holds her arms out, shielding herself as her body hangs motionless in the air too. Motion resumes. A color-modified negative of the mountainside shows the flaming debris trail. The sky and slope darken, and the flames turn night vision green, then brilliant yellow, orange, and red. At the crash site, fire blazes in the wreckage, filling the air with smoke. Alice emerges from the haze. She stumbles forward past torn pieces of metal. Her shoulders heave as she gasps for breath. As she limps away from the crash, our view fades to black.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency. There is no infection. We offer safety and security, food and shelter.
Words appear 6 months later.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency.
Our view glides from a sunny pine forest to snow-capped mountains.
While I took revenge on Umbrella, the last handful of survivors took a chopper to safety. They were headed for a town in Alaska called Arcadia. We'd received radio transmissions from there. They offered food and shelter, safety and security. A haven, free of infection.
A small red monoplane swoops over glassy water speckled with chunks of ice. It glides toward the sheer head of a glacier, then soars over its jagged surface. In the cockpit, Alice films herself with a camcorder.
May 3rd, 1600 hours. 177 days without signs of life. I'm at 58.37 degrees north, 134.58 degrees west. Closing in on the coordinates for Arcadia. No signs of it on any map.
Her brow creases.
I hope Claire and the others made it.
Her aircraft rises as it continues toward more snow-covered mountains, fade to black. Later, gray clouds blanket the sky above a vacant field. Alice's plane descends on the tree-lined horizon, then lands and taxis over the golden grass. The plane slows, then pulls to a stop, its wings teetering slightly. In the cockpit, Alice removes her seatbelt. As the propeller halts, she slides back the aircraft's canopy and rises from her seat. dressed in knee-high boots and a mid-thigh trench coat with a fur-lined collar. She steps onto the plane's wing and trains her gaze downfield. 100+ aircraft of all makes and models sit parked neatly before her. With her cherry red lips parted, Alice shifts her eyes, then jumps down from her plane's wing. Her aircraft faces the runway-like aisle of grass created by the parked planes. As she walks the aisle, Alice looks at a small civilian plane to her right, then a larger twin-prop aircraft to her left. The airplanes look clean and well-kept. Some are glossy, others show a matte finish. Farther along, Alice glances over her shoulder as she heads down a sandy trail between two military helicopters. Up ahead, two dunes part, revealing the ocean on the horizon. On the beach, leafless trees stand silhouetted against the overcast sky. She marches to a helicopter marked with the Umbrella logo. Running her hand along the chopper's side, Alice sweeps her gaze around the empty five-person cockpit, then glances over her shoulder, checking the deserted beach. She returns her attention to the corporate chopper. On the floor of the cockpit, she spots a weathered journal. Flipping through it, she finds the map with Arcadia's location marked on it. She lifts her gaze and remembers Kmart and other survivors climbing into the helicopter. In the black and white flashback, she places the journal on the young woman's lap, then backs away from the chopper. The young blonde gapes.
You're not coming?
Alice shakes her head.
Take care of the others. Good luck, Kmart.
She nods at a striking woman seated up front.
Where?
Shielding her eyes, Alice watches as the helicopter flies away. Back in Alaska, she leans against the chopper, the journal lowered. She returns her gaze to it and strolls to the water's edge, where waves roll gently ashore. A view from many yards down the beach shows Alice approaching a weather-worn log. On the horizon, the sun casts a glittering path over the rippling surf. Now, the distant view watches Alice from behind a stand of young trees. The newcomer sets her video camera on one end of the driftwood. She turns it on and sits.
May 3rd, 1930 hours. Arcadia. No such place exists. Just an empty field. And a beach. But we all heard the transmissions. Someone must have sent them. Someone must have brought all these people here.
She stares into the distance.
But why? Where did they go?
Alice crouches before her camera.
Day 177 signing off.
A grainy view through the camcorder shows her despondent expression.
I don't know if I can do this much longer.
Her lips stutter as she averts her gaze.
What if I'm the last one? What if there is no one else?
She glances away.
No one to watch these tapes.
She returns her eyes to the camera.
Is this my punishment? For letting all this happen?
A few feet inland, someone runs by.
Hey! Wait!
Alice sprints off the beach back to the field of airplanes.
Wait! Wait! Stop!
She halts.
Hello? Answer me!
She focuses on a small cargo plane's double doors. One hangs open, revealing little of the dark interior. The other swings faintly. Alice draws a hefty revolver in each hand and aims at the plane. She creeps forward. The weapons tremble slightly in her raised hands as she approaches the dingy fuselage. Reaching the doors, Alice turns to look into the aircraft. Crows fly out. Alice shields her face as the birds soar past her. As she turns, a woman with scraggly auburn hair punches her in the face. She straddles Alice on the ground and tries to plunge a knife into her chest. Alice grabs her attacker's hand, stopping the blow, and struggles to push the knife away. She kicks her leg up, which rolls the scraggly woman to the grass. Now Alice jumps back to avoid her attacker's blade. She evades another swing, then kicks the woman hard against the plane. The aggressor drops face down. Alice uses her foot to roll the unconscious woman over. It's Claire. Alice gapes. She glimpses the edge of a silver object under Claire's tank top. Alice pulls the fabric down to reveal a robotic spider with a glowing red back attached to Claire's chest. It stirs as Alice touches it. She withdraws her hand. Nighttime. Alice holds the robotic spider in her hands and examines it, then shifts her gaze to Claire. The dirt-smeared woman slumps, still unconscious, against the landing gear of the plane. Her wrists bound to it, she awakens and thrashes against the restraints. Alice squats in front of her.
Hey, hey. It's okay.
Claire tries to free her wrists.
Sorry about that.
Alice shows the robot.
But I had to get this thing off of you. What is this? Who did this to you?
Claire gives her a wary look. Alice furrows her brow.
Do you even know who I am?
Claire's chest heaves as she stares distrustfully at her captor.
My name is Alice. We met in the Nevada desert 18 months ago. Any of this sound familiar?
Her eyes search Claire's.
Mikey Carlos LJ. Kmart. You left in a helicopter with a group of survivors headed for Alaska. Arcadia, remember?
A green-tinted satellite view shows the field of planes. Crosshairs focus on the heat signature made by Alice's campfire.
Arcadia, remember?
An alert blinks on screen. Locked.
Arcadia, remember?
Fade to black. Now Alice's plane glides over a jagged glacier. The aircraft swoops over water speckled with ice, then banks toward grassier coastline. In the cockpit, Alice continues her video log while Claire rides behind her.
May 4th, 0800 hours, plotting a course for Prince Rupert in British Columbia. I'll pass Vancouver, drop down to Seattle. After that, it's San Francisco. The rest of the western seaboard.
Alice wearily lifts her brow. She presses her lips together.
My passenger's still as talkative as ever. Whatever that thing was, it was injecting her with some sort of drug. Something that causes memory loss. I just hope the effects aren't permanent.
Looking into the camera, Alice heaves a breath and stops recording. Now the satellite view shows North America's west coast. It zooms in, revealing a more detailed view, and its crosshairs track Alice's plane as it follows the shoreline.
Your name is Alice, right? She speaks.
In the plane.
Look, I'm sorry about back there. I don't know what happened.
Claire glances out the window.
I don't remember anything.
Alice's eyes are in her peripheral vision.
I don't even know my name. It's Claire. Claire Redfield. Claire. Sound familiar?
Claire averts her gaze, then shrugs her brow.
Not really.
Alice faces forward.
You'll get used to it.
Claire raises her hands, which are bound by rope at the wrists.
Perhaps you can cut me loose now?
We should get to know each other a little better first.
Claire lowers her arms, then shifts her gaze out the window. In an aerial view, Alice's plane follows a road leading through brush-covered mountains. Up ahead, black smoke rises in columns from a ravaged city skyline. Alice's lips part as she spots the Hollywood sign on a charred hillside. Its block letters filthy and decrepit. Small fires burn around it. Alice pilots her plane over the sign.
City of Angels.
As they fly toward downtown's smoldering skyscraper, she records a log entry.
May 6th, 1800 hours. Los Angeles. No signs of life.
Her eyes narrow.
Not even the undead.
She glances around.
Some must have burnt with the city. But what about the rest?
She shifts the plane's control stick, steering over the hellishly damaged metropolis. Ragged skyscrapers bear black scorch marks. Several stand as gutted frames of girders. Alice spots something, and her jaw drops.
Oh my God. What? Look over there.
Claire follows Alice's gaze, then stares with wide eyes. Alice banks the plane left. On a building's rooftop, a man spots them through a pair of binoculars. He gapes. Dressed in camouflage BDUs and a tactical vest, he hurries into a tent and pulls out a hand-operated siren. He turns its crank. A mustached man in a suit emerges onto the roof from a utility bunker.
It's a plane. It's a plane!
Two men join him, one petite and one athletic.
I knew it! Told you they would come.
Hey, we're down here! Hello!
At their feet, the rooftop shows the painted words, "Help us." The roof belongs to a concrete fortress, which looms well above the light industrial city block surrounding it. On the ground, twitching, disfigured zombies see the plane. Alice's aerial view orbits the reinforced building. Its protective outer wall keeps the undead legions out. Alice peers down at the 100,000 zombies swarming the wall and its gates, trying to break in. Claire stares. Alice shakes her head.
No way we're getting in there.
Alice banks off to the right, passing over the paved LA River.
Where's it going? Why is it flying away?
It's not flying away. It's circling.
Circling.
The athletic man furrows his brow.
Damn, he's low.
The survivors drop to the ground as the plane swoops over them, then lifts back into the air.
What the hell is he doing?
As Alice flies away from the building, the survivors get to their feet.
He's gonna land. He's gonna land. Get all the stuff out of the way, quick, go!
Land?
Yeah, land.
The mustached man eyes the plane.
That is one crazy son of a bitch.
Alice buckles her seatbelt.
This may get a little rough. Me loose.
Claire raises her wrists. Alice takes out a knife and eyes it, then passes it over her shoulder to Claire, who slices at the rope.
Thanks. Just don't do anything crazy, all right?
Claire frees herself.
Nothing as crazy as what you have in mind.
Alice's lips curl into a smile. On the rooftop, the strapping man in fatigues unearths a radio tower cable running under the rooftop gravel.
Come on, keep moving!
I'm trying.
As Kim struggles to push a cart, the athletic man helps tug it out of the way. Meanwhile, the man in fatigues anchors the radio tower cable to a flagpole.
All right, hold on.
The athletic man strains to move an oil drum out of the way.
Hurry,
he gapes. Meanwhile, Claire frowns as the plane begins to shake and the control light blinks.
Come on.
As it nears the building, the plane drops out of sight, then reappears, swooping just over the roof. The athletic man barely ducks down in time. The plane touches down. As it speeds over the gravel, the mustached man hits the deck, and the wing glides right over his head. The man in fatigues pulls the taut cable around his second pipe, and the line catches on the plane's landing gear. The aircraft slows, but breaches the parapet on the roof's edge. The nose balances precariously over the hungry zombies far below. As the military man grips the cable, the flagpole's bolted mount gives, and he loses his grip. The plane tips forward. The athletic man races across the roof. Leaping high in a slam dunk type move, he grabs hold of the plane's tail and his added weight tips the plane back to the roof. The others help. A slender young woman with brown hair helps the athletic man weigh down the plane's tail as the other survivors heave to.
That's it. Good job.
Alice slides back the airplane's transparent canopy and climbs onto the wing. She wears two guns strapped to her back and two more at her waist.
Nice landing.
I think technically it's called crashing.
Smiling, the athletic man gives Alice a hand as she jumps down.
Luther West.
They shake hands.
Alice, it's Claire.
Luther greets Claire.
Luther West. Pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Ignoring his extended hand, Claire jumps down past him. Now the brunette greets Alice.
Hi, my name's
Crystal.
No.
Enough with the introductions. So, you're here to help us, right?
Can you get us out?
You're from Arcadia.
What did you say?
Are you from Arcadia?
What do you know about Arcadia?
You said they could help us.
There are other survivors, civilization and safety.
Infection free.
So they sent you, right?
No. But there are others out there, like you.
It's just us.
There's to be no rescue.
I'm sorry.
Kim, Crystal, and the mustached man turn away.
Sorry.
Look, don't take it so bad, all right? They had their hopes up. And...
thought you could take them to the promised land. Angel Ortiz. But it was some fine flying.
Thanks.
Later, Alice stands at the front of the plane, methodically rotating the propeller in alternating directions. Luther joins her.
What's the prognosis?
She'll live.
Yeah.
You know, I have the strangest feeling. I know you.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
You a sports fan, huh?
You like basketball?
Not really.
No. Well, maybe just a fan of fine timepieces.
On a distant rooftop billboard, Luther models a luxury wristwatch.
Yeah. Luther here is our resident superstar.
So tell me about Arcadia. What exactly do you know?
Just what we heard from their transmissions.
We've been receiving their broadcasts all week. Food and shelter, safety and security, now infection.
We thought they sent you. We've been launching flares for days to get their attention.
Flares?
Alice gives the men an incredulous smirk.
Who's gonna see flares from Alaska?
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 Arcadia, I've been there. It's in Alaska. It's a town, or so we thought.
A town? I don't think so.
Later, Angel hands her high-tech binoculars.
Take a look.
What?
He points. A zooming view through the lenses shows an enormous ocean freighter.
You see?
It bears the name Arcadia.
It's not a town.
Alice lowers the binoculars.
It's a ship.
I recorded this from the shortwave.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency. There is no infection. We offer safety and security.
It's the same message we heard. They must have sailed down the coast picking up survivors.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency.
What is that?
I don't know. That was the last we heard from them. Then it just stopped.
That was 2 days ago. We've been sending up flares on the hour. So when you arrived, of course we thought they sent you.
Alice gazes out toward the coast. She peers again through the binoculars at the ship. Later, she joins Claire on a stairway.
Claire. That ship over there. That's Arcadia.
I know.
You remember?
I remember the beach.
In a flashback, inflatable motor-powered rafts arrive. Claire disembarks from the helicopter.
People were coming to help us.
What happened? Why didn't you go with the others?
Now, the green-tinged satellite view looks down on the building's roof.
We have to get to that ship. We have to get to that ship.
Fade to black. Nighttime. On the roof, Angel steps into the glow of a blazing wall-mounted torch. Propping 1 foot on a ledge, he loads a flare gun and aims it skyward. The flare bathes the rooftop in a flickering emerald-tinted glow. As it twinkles above, Angel peers over the rooftop's edge, holding the torch aloft. Gazing up at him, we drift down several stories alongside the building's fortress-like walls. On an outpost below, Luther finishes lighting a row of torches. Lettering on the concrete beneath him reads, Citadel Correctional Facility. 20 feet below, the horde of zombies crowds the base, their upstretched hands reaching futilely for the uninfected human. Luther holds a torch high as he regards them warily, then turns away. Our view descends past the horde, then beneath the street's surface. As we sink past layers of rock, we come to a disturbance in a wall of earth. A gray hand digs through, followed by a decomposing face with colorless eyes and a snarling mouth. Now, by the light of his torch, Luther leads Alice to a cavernous dining hall outfitted with institutional table and chair units. More torches illuminate the room.
Welcome to your new home. Cell Block B.
An atrium many stories high soars above them. Its stacked jail-barred walkways flicker with torchlight.
Crystal's our cook. The menu's not extensive, but she is a master of what she does.
Sorry, I didn't bring better news.
Get used to disappointment, right? That's what my agent used to say.
Were you an actress?
Came to Hollywood to live the dream, ended up waiting tables.
Why are we waiting? Excuse me, I'm hungry. Thank you.
Get out of here, huh?
Thank you.
Luther shoves the rude mustached man off with his tray.
I had plenty of creeps like him in my time.
Kim follows the rude survivor.
What's his story?
Back in the world, he was some kind of big movie producer. The boy's got a stick up his ass.
The producer and Kim eye Luther.
Kim Young used to intern for him. Still hasn't figured out the world has changed.
Luther carries his tray to a table, his gaze locked on them. He draws a gun, sets it down, and takes a seat. Crystal and Alice sit with him. He holds a couple of plastic forks out to the newcomer, and she takes one.
That plane of yours, do you think it could still fly?
It can fly, but it only seats two.
So you could take us to Arcadia one at a time?
Look, I think she was lucky to land here once. Five or six times would be suicide. No offense.
None taken.
Alice gives him a good-natured smirk, and he looks down with a grin.
There has to be another way out. We have to get to that ship.
Well, there is that.
Crystal pipes down at Luther's signal.
What?
Nothing. Look, it would be a waste of your time.
Time to waste.
Now Luther leads Alice down a concrete stairway lit by more torches.
When the shit hit the fan, we took refuge in the prison. Seemed like it had the biggest, strongest walls. Best chance of keeping those things out. By the time we got here, the guards and the inmates were already long gone. I guess when people started eating one another, wasn't much point in keeping anybody locked up. We thought the place was abandoned. Until we made a discovery.
They reach a huge room containing a freestanding cage-like cell. A bald man guards it.
Wendell, tell him to take a break.
It's about goddamn time. I hate being down here. I'm hearing movement in the walls.
So let's check it out. We'll be back in a minute.
Wendell stays planted in his seat.
Come on.
He stands, drops a magazine on his chair, and follows Luther off. Left on her own, Alice meanders closer to the cell. A slot in the door shows an athletically built man with close-cropped hair sitting hunched inside, his brow resting against his hand. Alice leans closer, her light eyes blinking. The man gets to his feet and crosses to the door. Its plexiglass panes allow a view of his all-American features. The two share a curious, scrutinizing gaze. The prisoner thrusts his gloved hand through a slot.
Name's Chris.
He presses his lips together, then points a finger at her.
You were the one flying that plane.
How do you know that?
Wendell isn't the only one that hears things. I'm glad you made it. Maybe you can talk some sense into these people.
What do you mean?
Crouching, Chris peers through the slot.
Isn't it obvious? I'm not a prisoner.
Alice listens intently.
I shouldn't be in here.
Chris's narrowed eyes gleam in the torchlight. Alice circles the cell.
I was working with a military unit. We're using this place as a staging post. Things were already pretty bad when the order came through from the governor to release all the inmates. You see, we needed as many people on the streets as possible to fight those things. And it was chaos. We were pulling out and a gang of the prisoners jumped me. Guess they thought I was a guard. I woke up, my unit was gone, and I was in here. Their idea of a joke.
Alice gazes off.
You don't believe me.
She leans an arm on the cell frame and looks him in the eyes.
To the others.
You need to get me out of here.
We're all trapped here one way or the other.
That's true.
I can help you.
Luther returns.
Is it enough?
You find anything?
Nope.
I know a way out of this place.
Alice regards Chris, then follows Luther and Wendell out. Chris stands at the cell door.
You get me out of here, I'll do the same for you. You're gonna need me!
Now on a staircase.
Have you checked out what he's talking about?
His way out? He's not telling us shit till we let him out. And I'm not letting him out. The man is a killer.
Really?
I can see it in his eyes.
How can you be so sure?
Well, I know people.
Interesting. So tell me. What do you see when you look into my eyes?
Now Alice unrolls a length of cloth, revealing a cache of weapons.
Whoa!
Luther stares at the blades, bullets, and grenades.
Holy shit!
Girl's gotta be prepared.
She empties a pouch of coins onto the table.
What would you possibly want with those?
It's a hobby.
A hobby. All right.
She stacks them methodically.
Well, I'll see you in the morning.
Luther watches her with a smile, then leaves her. Now a view through the binoculars focuses on the Arcadia. A row of bridge windows gives off a glimmer of light.
No sign of anyone on deck.
Claire lowers the binoculars.
Your friends are out there.
I think so.
You don't remember?
It's coming back. Slowly.
Angel gives an understanding nod, and they both gaze out toward the ship.
Nothing that makes any sense.
Claire glances at her companion with a brief, vulnerable smile, then peers through the binoculars again. The distant ship still shows no sign of movement. Now, by Chris's cell, Wendell reads his magazine. He looks up, his eyes wide. Leaning forward in his seat, he shifts his vigilant gaze. The only movement around the cage-like cell comes from the torches. Wendell eyes the room's entrance, then looks in the opposite direction. Wendell looks around once more, then returns his attention to his magazine. Elsewhere, torchlight flickers on a cinder block wall. Just around it, two rows of vertical pipes 7 feet high stand evenly spaced down the middle of a room. Sunlight filters in through tall, narrow windows and glints on a wet floor. A patch of tile surrounding a drain buckles upward, cut to black. Now, on a city street, scraps of newspaper flutter among ruined cars. A colossal figure walks the neglected boulevard, a burlap hood covering his head. He wears a grappling hook on his back and drags an enormous custom battle hammer behind him, its serrated axe blade stained crimson. Now our bird's eye view revolves around the citadel. Countless undead crowd the perimeter wall. On ground level, dozens of arms reach futilely through the gate. Now Luther takes Alice into the tiled room. He walks her past a row of sinks to one of the vertical pipes.
We still have running water.
It's very civilized.
We do our best.
He turns a knob on the pipe, activating a shower.
It's cold.
Our best only goes so far. Here's a few.
Thank you.
He gives her some folded towels.
I guess I should leave you to it.
I guess you should.
I'll be right outside.
Thank you.
As Luther steps out, Alice chuckles and shakes her head. She sets her weapons holster against another shower pipe. Her back to us, she takes off the armored bodice worn over her black t-shirt.
Luther?
The bathroom doorway frames her distant form.
Luther?
Alice peers warily past the shower's streaming water, then draws a six-shooter from her holster. Taking an expert two-handed grip on the weapon, she aims toward the door. Alice advances warily in its direction, keeping her knees slightly bent. She sweeps her aim across the seemingly vacant room. She turns. Lowering her chin, she changes direction. Alice moves with slow, deliberate steps, her facial muscles tense. In a small anteroom, drying towels hang draped along a linen rack. Alice's parted lips briefly show a glimpse of her gritted teeth. She closes her mouth, forming a resolute scowl as she reaches the linen rack. Sweeping a towel away, she finds Wendell crouched on the other side. He straightens, raising his hands, and puts on a sheepish smile.
Take it easy, honey.
Move it.
Okay, I'm just gonna be on my way now.
She grabs him by the collar.
Take it easy.
Get relaxed.
A zombie behind her flexes four fanged tentacles that blossom from its mouth. As Alice shoots it, a second zombie's tentacles latch onto Wendell's face. A third runs at Alice, but she takes it down with her gun. She sees Wendell get yanked down the hole in the floor. She lowers her gun, her brow furrowed. Later, Angel and Claire peer into the hole. As he turns on a flashlight, we recede 50 yards down the stretching tunnel. A shape darts by.
What is that smell?
It must have burrowed up from the sewers.
Wendell said he heard things moving behind the wall.
What? So these things can just burst out anywhere?
We gotta get out of this place.
Arcadia will send help.
No one's coming to get us, okay? No one. We have to help ourselves. Now this plane that you have
won't hold everybody.
Well, we could draw straws.
No!
We all get out of here and no one gets left behind.
Great. How are we gonna do that? Walk out of here, just single file.
Are you crazy?
Now at Chris's cell.
They didn't want him getting out.
That's right, he's dangerous.
Angel, what do you think? I think we don't have much of a choice.
This is insane. Crystal, look at me, what do you think? I mean, not even you're that dumb.
I guess I am. I agree with Angel. If this guy thinks he knows a way out, I want to hear it.
All right.
Seriously?
Alice unlocks the human cage.
This is a mistake. This is a big mistake.
You better keep your eyes on him.
She and Luther slide the door open, revealing Chris lounging on his cot. He turns his head to face them, then gets to his feet. At the open door, he lingers on the threshold and regards the group.
I was wondering how long it would take.
Smirking under his narrowed eyes, he plods down the cage steps. Luther stands at his shoulder, watching him carefully. Chris faces the mustached producer, who shifts his increasingly uneasy gaze.
Boo.
All right, let's get the hell out of here.
Alice steps aside, revealing Claire behind her.
Claire?
What?
He takes a few steps closer, his eyes glistening. He smiles.
Claire, it's me.
Alice observes, wide-eyed. The amnesiac stares at Chris as he stops before her.
It's Chris.
He caresses her cheek. Claire grabs his arm and twists it behind his back.
I knew you.
Claire, I'm your brother, remember? What the hell's happened to you?
Alice lays a hand on Claire's.
It's okay. Let him go.
Claire releases him with a shove. Chris massages his arm and works his elbow.
Look, she suffered some sort of memory loss. If you really are her brother, you'll come back.
All right, this is very touching. I mean, a family reunion. If we could just get a move on, please, before we're all eaten the fuck alive.
Now zombies crowd the prison gates, groping hungrily at the bars. Chris leads the survivors past them to a heavy-duty garage door.
Behind those doors is a UPV, Urban Pacification Vehicle. The prison kept it in case of a serious riot. 16-wheeler, steel plate, water cannon, seats 20. 10 tons of fun. Roll on out in style. Drive right over.
The lock's jammed. But we can cut through it.
When we hit the coast, we're gonna have to transfer to a boat of some kind.
We're gonna need some more firepower.
I got you covered. In our station here, we used a room in the basement as an armory. It's got every weapon you can dream of.
How do you know your unit didn't take him with them when they pulled out?
Because by the end, there were a lot more guns than there were people to use them.
The giant's battle hammer pounds at the gate.
You go get the guns, Luther!
Claire leads the former basketball star over. Halting in her tracks, she gawks.
Oh my god!
Long nails jut from the giant's hooded face, neck, and shoulders. Now Chris shows Alice a flooded elevator shaft.
What is this?
They had pumps to keep the water out of the foundations. When the electricity failed, some of the lower levels started filling up. There's another two floors down there.
And how far down is the armory?
All the way.
Behind the gates, Luther grabs a fire axe off a wall.
Luther, come on!
He uses it to bar the gate. At the elevator shaft, Chris and Dallas inventory her weapons. Crystal joins them.
Where do you think you're going?
I was a swim champ back in high school.
Is that right?
Here?
She gives Crystal a six-shooter. Facing Chris, she holds out another. He eyes it warily.
So now you're gonna trust me with a gun?
Yeah. Why not?
Chris accepts the weapon. Outside.
Luther, just shoot that motherfucker.
Drawing a handgun, Luther shoots the giant repeatedly in the head. The creature keeps banging on the gate.
What the fuck is that thing?
Across the yard, the producer looks on as Angel takes a plasma torch to the garage door lock. Inside the prison, Alice steps to the edge of the flooded shaft, flashlight in hand. Taking a deep breath, she jumps into the rippling water. Beneath the surface, our murky view finds Alice as she rounds a partitioning wall. She pauses, sweeping her flashlight over her surroundings. Finding stenciled lettering on a far wall, she swims in its direction using a steady breaststroke. She nears a chair and an empty shelving unit, then shines her light on the wall again. It reads, Reception, Elevator to Central Processing. She ventures on, her features obscured by the shadowy water. Elsewhere, bubbles rise from a weak spot in the wall as hands punch their way through. Another figure burrows out from the stenciled wall. Back at the partition, a normal human hand grips the corner. Crystal pulls herself into view, shining a flashlight of her own. Gazing about briefly, she swims in Alice's direction, her feet kicking in white tennis shoes. Now, Chris's gloved hand reaches around the partition as he arrives, bringing up the rear. Bubbles rise from his nose as he follows his companions. In the lead, Alice proceeds past a cage wire window. A shadowy form darts by on the other side. Sweeping her flashlight in its direction, she finds nothing. Now Crystal gazes about with wide eyes as she swims down a narrow corridor, her long hair flowing around her head like seaweed. Clutching the cage wire window, she pulls herself along. Chris follows close behind. Now light and bubbles fill our view. At the bottom of a flooded stairwell, Alice surfaces. Chris and Crystal arrive too. Alice leads them upstairs. Her flashlight beam penetrates a narrow corridor lined with a few benches. As her companions catch up, Alice draws a scimitar. All three survivors shine their flashlights down the shadowy hallway. Chris lights a flare. With a toss, he sends the red gleaming torch skidding down the hall to a closed door at the end.
All right. Let's go.
A zombie leaps out of the flooded stairwell, seizes Crystal, and dives under with her. Bloody water splashes. Another zombie bursts up, brandishing its fanged tentacles. Alice stabs it through the mouth, and her blade erupts out the back of its head. It falls back in the water. As more zombies clamber out, Chris shoots them.
Let's go.
Alice and Chris dash up the hallway and around a corner. They bolt into the armory and slam the reinforced door shut just as a zombie smacks into it. Cut to black. Alice lights a flare. Its crimson glow reveals floor-to-ceiling racks packed with guns of every description. Alice paces to a back wall where shelved machine guns balance on their stands. She grins from ear to ear. Now outside, Angel downs the lock on the garage door. The producer helps him raise the door as King covers them. Daylight silhouettes the trio as they tread inside. They gawk at the heavily armored eight-wheeled pacification vehicle.
Dead.
Meanwhile, out in the yard, Luther and Claire wheel a dusty police cruiser toward the gates. The giant zombie's warhammer strikes the metal frame repeatedly, loosening the bolts that fasten them to the wall. Now in the armory, Alice loads a gun as Chris packs a bag with weaponry and munitions. Alice glances at the door.
There must be hundreds of them out there. We can't go back that way.
Alice spots an air vent. In the garage, Angel notices a huge engine hanging on chains.
Oh, shit.
What do you mean, oh, shit? What is this?
What do you think it is?
Oh, don't tell me that thing fits inside of there.
Can you put this back together?
Maybe, but it could take a week.
What do we do now?
I know.
The producer shoots Angel, splattering Kim Young with blood. The petite man's jaw hangs slack.
Bennett. What have you done?
Outside, the colossal zombie bludgeons the gate with his hammer. The lock dangles and the hinge bolts jerk further out of the wall.
Luther, we gotta get out of here! Come on!
The survivors sprint away as the gate topples inward, crashing down onto the cruiser. Meanwhile, in a dank prison corridor, hands poke up through a grate in the floor and shift to the side. Hannes climbs out, aiming her flashlight down the corridor. She crouches and pulls a duffel bag out of the vent. Chris climbs out after it and stands at Alice's side.
Did you hear that?
They run off. Now on the roof, Bennett sits in Alice's plane as the propeller whirls.
Come on, baby, come on.
What are we doing?
We're getting out of here.
But the others!
Fuck the others! Now get on board!
Bennett, what are you doing?
Locked cage wire doors block Luther and Claire from the roof.
Open the door.
Alice and Chris exit a stairwell door.
Bennett
shoots at them. Alice takes cover behind a dumpster as the plane taxis across the roof. Luther kicks the locked door open and races after the plane with Alice and Chris. The plane plummets off the edge of the roof. Bennett pulls back on the stick.
That's right, bitch! Fuck you!
The plane barely pulls out of the dive. It skims across thousands of zombies on the ground, leaving a splattered red trail behind it.
Son of a bitch.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
He's headed for the Arcadia.
As the plane soars off toward the horizon, a zombie charges. Luther shoots it, but dozens more arrive in its wake. An aerial view shows the zombies infesting the roof. Crouching at a duffel bag, Claire tosses Alice a submachine gun. Alice, Luther, Claire, and Chris face the oncoming horde, guns blazing. Kim cowers between them. Red mist explodes into the air as the survivors nail their targets. Alice notices more zombies rushing out of a different stairwell doorway and turns her gun on them. Still more creatures scrabble out, snarling hungrily. Alice hustles across the roof, her firepower keeping a path clear. The other survivors follow. Chris and Kim race into a cargo elevator, and Claire, Alice, and Luther hold back the zombies. As Alice rushes for the duffel bag, Chris takes her place.
Head for the tower box!
She steps back outside.
Help! I'll meet you there!
Kim faces the elevator controls.
This thing has no power!
We won't need power!
The survivors pull the door shut. Alice tosses an explosive onto the elevator roof. She darts away from the elevator. A fiery explosion billows out of the shaft, shoving her forward and shooting out debris. The elevator cables snap and the car plummets downward. It splashes into the water at the bottom of the shaft. Kim scrambles to the door and clambers out as the elevator tips and sinks. He races off down a corridor. Luther climbs out, followed by Claire and Chris. Meanwhile, on the roof, Alice ties a cable to her belt. Resolutely pursing her lips, she keeps shooting and mows down more zombies. Hundreds rush her lone form. She flings the gun aside. As she races toward the roof's edge, she tosses the duffel bag on the gravel. An armed charge spills out. As the zombies close in, Alice leaps off the roof's edge. Dozens of zombies fall off after her. As Alice free falls, the cable trails behind her, uncoiling from the roof. In slow motion, her hair whips in the wind. Now the cable pulls taut, tied to a pipe. The arm charge left behind with the bag of explosives splashes yellow, and a monstrous blast blankets the roof. Alice swings along the side of the building. Zombies and debris rain down around her. On her descent toward the zombie-infested ground, Alice releases the cable and draws two handguns. She rolls acrobatically to her feet and fires shots into zombie heads and chests. Luther fires from a nearby doorway. Alice tears toward him, racing between the less agile zombies crowding the yard. In slow motion, one blocks her path and she shoots him in the head. Another zombie lurches toward her and she shoots him with her other handgun. The back of his head explodes. Alice tosses both guns over her shoulders and draws two sawed-off shotguns from holsters on her back. Two zombies block her path, and she fires both guns. Coins rip through the zombies' chests and out their backs like buckshot. More coins tear through zombies and shatter the facing of a concrete pillar. In the doorway, Luther ducks. Coins riddle the concrete wall around him. He eyes a bloody quarter lodged in the wall, then drags the overhead roller door downward. Alice drops to the ground and slides under it just before it slams shut. Inside.
You all right?
She wavers unsteadily.
Thanks.
Later, they peer down the tunnel dug by the zombies.
Some kind of joke, right?
No. Tunnels lead to the sewers, sewers lead to the storm drains.
Storm drain leads to the sea.
It's our only chance.
I'll take point.
I got you back.
Chris climbs into the tunnel and Luther faces the women.
Ladies?
He climbs in. Claire peers down after him. Kim hesitates just behind her.
All right, you're next.
I can't do it.
You can. Let's go!
The giant's battle hammer blade slices Kim down the middle. Alice attacks, delivering a high-flying kick uselessly to the killer's burlap-covered head. She dodges hammer strikes, which take out a urinal, then a wall. Alice draws her sawed-off shotguns, but the giant knocks her into a wall, shattering the tile. She falls unconscious, one gun skitters aside. As the giant raises his blade to finish her, blood spurts from his shoulder. Claire shoots him repeatedly. She ducks under his swinging blade, which slices a water pipe in half. Water shoots up toward the ceiling. Claire races across the shower room, barely dodging each swing of the colossal blade. The hulking creature chops through a whole row of water pipes. In slow motion, the giant chases her through the showers as water pipes spurt like fountains flooding the floor. Reaching the wall, Claire runs up it. She launches herself off a window ledge and flips backward over the giant's head. The young woman lands in a crouch and half smiles up at the creature. Water rains down around her. As the brawny killer turns slowly to face her, Claire straightens and takes up an alert stance. The giant starts toward her. Claire gives a determined snare. Blood coats the killer's axe blade, and daylight glints off the spikes on his shoulders and hood. Claire notices Alice's sawed-off shotgun lying on the floor halfway between them. She glances back at the oncoming killer, then dashes toward him head-on. The foes close in on each other. A few feet from him, Claire drops onto her back and slides across the water-slicked floor. She seizes Alice's gun on her way. As she slides between the giant's legs, she fires upward at him. Red mist and shiny coins spray out of the colossal creature's back. His dangling butcher's apron flaps over her as she slides away from him. He falls to his knees, then topples forward, dropping his battle hammer. It crashes onto the floor, followed by his upper body. At the windows, Claire stands and pants for breath, turning to face the fallen zombie giant. He lies still between the spraying water pipes. As Claire heaves a sigh, the giant plants his hands on the floor and pushes himself upright. Joins Claire as the giant hurls his battle hammer at them. It whirls through the air at us, parallel to the floor. Alice yanks Claire down and the blade passes just above them. Straightening, Alice spins back toward the giant, raises her other shotgun, and fires. The killer's head explodes. His body smacks onto the floor, spilling bloody coins. Alice and Claire eye the battle hammer, whose axe blade sits lodged in the concrete wall. Claire grins and sportingly bumps Alice with her shoulder. Alice disbelievingly shakes her head. On the floor, bloody water washes down a drain. Scattered coins lie around it. Our view glides toward the drain holes. A central hole looms larger and larger until we pass through it. Later, a flashlight beam jostles within a shadowy tunnel as the women crawl through it. The meager light illuminates the rocky, rough-hewn walls around them. Cringing, Alice struggles to pull herself through the narrow space on her elbows. They reach a stretch of tunnel where strips of crimson tissue dangle from the walls and ceiling, glinting wetly in the flashlight beam. Claire studies her surroundings wide-eyed, then crawls quickly forward. Alice gawks, eyeing the scraps of translucent hanging skin. Claire inches forward behind her, reaching a tunnel intersection. She shines her flashlight up one passage, then whirls around and finds a figure beside her in the other.
Shh. Those things are close.
It's Luther.
We found a way out just down there. The tunnels drop into a storm drain. Go.
Claire hurries on. Luther peers attentively after her, then shines his light at Alice, who follows close behind. Alice faces him.
Where's Kim Young?
She shakes her head and he slumps sadly.
Go, go.
She crawls into the darkness after Claire. Now Chris stands waiting in a tall storm drain, sweeping his flashlight around the dank passage. Claire drops out of a tunnel overhead and he catches her by the waist to soften her landing.
Knew you'd make it.
Alice drops down and Chris helps her as well. They shine their flashlights up at Luther in the tunnel opening. A zombie attacks from his right. Luther's legs kick out of sight as dust and debris rain down from the hole his friends shield themselves.
Luther!
Large chunks of mortar and rock now seal the opening. Alice's chest heaves.
You can't help him now.
Claire grips Alice's arm.
We have to move on.
Alice locks eyes with her, jerks free, and marches off along the storm drain passage toward a daylit glow. Claire regards Chris, then follows. He briefly gazes up at the blocked hole in the ceiling, then treads after the women. Distant light silhouettes their departing forms, which grow blurry. Chris glances uneasily over his shoulder. Fade to white. Later, a motorized skiff cruises along steely water toward thick fog. Alice, Chris, and Claire ride on board. The boat noses into the mist, disappearing with the survivors into the white haze. Now, the fog bank thins to reveal the distant ship. The skiff cruises out of the mist, motoring toward it. The name on the bow of the towering freighter reads Arcadia. The survivors near a buoyed platform moored to the ship, just under a metal staircase that ascends to its deck. Alice and Claire hop onto the platform and tie off the skiff. The survivors gaze over the water. Alice leads the way up the stairs. Wind whips her short bobbed hair as she reaches the ship's main deck and looks around. Chris and Claire board behind her as she brushes her hair back from her face. The survivors look around solemnly.
No welcome party, huh?
Alice strides onward. Chris and Claire follow her. Alice's red monoplane stands crash-landed at the ship's bow. The propeller lies bent out of shape, and the left wing snapped off at the fuselage. The tail section juts toward the sky, and the cockpit stands open and largely undamaged. Alice winces.
Like Bennett made it.
Chris glances back up the deck.
Let's check inside.
He and Claire head off. Alice lingers by her plane, then strolls after them. An aerial view shows the Arcadia's long, sprawling deck. Beyond the crashed airplane, a control tower the size of a medium building stands ominously at the distant stern. Now the survivors meet up in the abandoned bridge.
Did you find anyone?
Nothing.
I checked the crew quarters. They're all gone. Looks like they left in a hurry.
Alice turns on a radio.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency. There is no infection. We offer safety and security, food and shelter.
Fuel, power. Everything's running normally.
Look at this. It's the ship's log. Crew launched the lifeboats 3 days ago.
Exactly when the transmission stopped.
But it says there are still 2,000 survivors on board.
A computer documents the deployment of all 8 lifeboats and strobes a passenger total of more than 2,100, later below decks.
We have to search every inch of this ship.
A sign reads, hold 87C. The survivors creep around a corner and stride between 2 cargo containers. All 3 turn on their flashlights. They come upon a reinforced door marked with the Umbrella Corporation logo.
Of course. I remember them coming for us.
In a flashback, the boats arrive on the Alaskan beach as Claire climbs out of the helicopter. A man clamps a robotic spider to Kmart's chest. Another man seizes Claire while an assistant clamps a spider onto her chest. Claire boots the assistant backward, rolls her captor aside, and races away.
So
thing. Kedia. It was a lie.
No, it's worse than that.
The door unlocks.
It's a trap.
Claire aims her gun. The doors slide apart, revealing a vast, darkened chamber. The survivors tread in, their flashlights reflected on a polished floor. The doors close behind them. The survivors turn on their heels but make no effort to escape. Banks of overhead lights turn on in sequence high above them. The survivors find themselves in a pure white chamber with heavy bulkhead walls. Claire holds her gun steady.
Where is everybody?
Claire and Alice study the faintly patterned floor.
I don't understand.
Alice crouches and runs her fingers over an octagonal seam at her feet. Claire finds a tablet-sized touchscreen computer on a stand. She takes it off and scrolls through a list of photos and data.
They're holding survivors to experiment on them. Look.
She shows a listing.
It's Kmart. She's here.
Bring them up. All of them.
Dozens of clear containment cylinders with octagonal tops rise out of the floor. Healthy people stand upright inside, clad in plain white clothes. Each bears a robotic spider upon his or her chest. Deep freeze vapors pour out from vents atop the units. The survivors find Kmart's pod and jog toward it.
Here she is. Kmart.
Get her out.
Claire works the touchscreen tablet and the curved doors slide open. Kmart collapses.
Kmart, it's okay.
She struggles against the two women.
Kmart, it's all right.
I'll get this thing off her. Go let everyone else out. We're your friends. Right now, we need your help. Let me get this off you.
Claire reaches for the robotic spider. Alice walks among the containment pods, referring to the touchscreen tablet. She spots something of interest and detours down an aisle between rows of dormant umbrella captives. Clouds of steam waft past as she heads toward a pod whose clear housing is heavily streaked with blood and dark tissue. Alice stares at the empty case. Shifting her gaze, she moves to another blood-smeared pod. As she gently touches its wall, she sees clairvoyantly, flashing to convulsing test subjects in the pods, their panicked faces covered in blood. She withdraws her touch. Her eyes narrow as she notices a bloody drag trail leading across the floor. She follows it to a set of armored doors marked with the Umbrella logo. They slide apart and Alice enters a pristine white hangar. A low catwalk leads from one end to the other, and a fleet of hulking black Fletners sits parked in a row on one side. As the doors shut behind Alice, she glances back. Three sliding bolts seal them automatically. Now Alice notices a sign on a pillar. Three red wedge shapes and three white alternate in a circle to form the radioactive symbol. Words underneath read, restricted, caution. Below, a metal brace shaped like an H secures a circular item to a panel marked, purge. Alice strides down the catwalk. Meanwhile, Chris finds the touchscreen tablet on the floor by the bloody pods. Narrowing his eyes, he draws his gun and heads to the hangar doors. On the far end of the hangar, a second set of doors slides apart, and Alice finds herself looking into a spacious medical bay. On either side, hairless corpses lie on sterile white tables. Toward the back of the center aisle, transparent data screens display information. As Alice steps into the room, the doors slide shut, and the automated bolts shift into place. Alice walks between the experimentation tables, eyeing the emaciated bodies. Their white suits, open at the chest, reveal their skin, drawn tight over their rib cages. An edge-on view of the medical bay shows Alice approaching both data screens. One hangs in front of the other. The first lifts as Alice moves down the aisle. Through the second, she sees a seated silhouette. The screen lifts, revealing Wesker in sunglasses, enthroned on a white chair upon an octagonal platform.
Why am I not surprised?
You weren't too hard to find. Our satellite system is still operational, and there aren't too many people flying nowadays. Besides, I always knew you'd be drawn to your friends. Loyalty. Highly overrated.
Two infected Dobermans enter from behind him. Alice draws her guns.
Stop.
The zombie canines pause.
Down.
They sit.
Wouldn't want you harming my pets.
Alice aims at him. Bennett appears behind her with a gun.
Drop your guns.
Wesker gives a nod. Alice shifts her aim from him and lets her shotguns fall to the floor.
Thank you. Kick them to me.
She kicks them back, her eyes locked on Wesker.
Good.
Turning, she sweeps her gaze over the pasty, mustached man.
You don't look so good, Bennett.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to playing with your pretty face.
What do you want from me?
The T-virus brought me back.
His head jerks. He sets his jaw, his chest heaving.
But it's so strong. It fights me for control. I thought if I ingested fresh human DNA, I could redress the balance.
No wonder your crew abandoned ship.
No matter. Now I have a new subordinate. And a new plan. You are the only one who successfully bonded with the T-virus. Your DNA is stronger than the others. I ingest you. I gain control.
Nodding, Alice walks a few paces.
That's pretty smart thinking. There's only one problem with that plan.
Stop. Right there.
Alice freezes.
And what is that?
I'm not on the menu.
She boots a tray of surgical instruments at Wesker and takes out Bennett's gun with a roundhouse kick. Wesker dodges the scalpels, which impale his backrest, and Alice boots Bennett across a medical table. Now Wesker wipes a cut on his cheek. Alice reaches for her guns, but an infected dog blocks her way. Its head and neck divide in half, becoming two fleshy flaps like a Venus flytrap. Lined with teeth, the flaps meet at an inner fanged mouth. Behind Alice, the other dog's head splits. As the animals move in on Alice, Wesker smirks. Claire and Chris stand behind him and aim their guns.
Well, isn't this one big family reunion? Chris and Claire Redfield. You've really become quite an inconvenience for me.
Alice narrows her eyes.
I told you I'd be bringing a few friends.
Wesker doffs his sunglasses, his eyes glowing red. His pupils are vertical slits.
You should have brought more.
He whips his sunglasses toward Claire and Chris. As Chris catches them, Wesker is suddenly upon them. He knocks them both down. The dogs stand guard over Alice, blocking her path. Wesker puts his sunglasses back on. As Chris fires, Wesker dodges the bullets with supernatural speed. Chris charges. Wesker lifts him off the ground, elbows him in the back, then tosses him aside. Standing, Chris fires, but Wesker backflips over the bullets. Claire swings her gun at the villain, but Wesker blocks, then shields his body with hers. She pulls out a gut hook knife and jams it into his leg. Wesker throws Claire to the ground. He withdraws the bloody knife and hurls it down. As Chris fires again, Wesker dodges the bullets. He punches Chris in the face. Claire shoots, and Wesker leans back, evading the shot. He blocks a punch from Chris, then smacks Claire out of the way. He blocks another strike from Chris. In slow motion, bullets whiz past his face. Claire kicks, but he shoves her leg away. He grabs both siblings' wrists and flips them into the air. They sail into containment pods, which seal shut. Now a dog lunges at Alice, who turns sideways, evading its charge. Claire's pod begins to descend into the floor. Alice dives for her gun. As a dog bounds at her, she fires point blank. Coins tear through it and shatter the data screens overhead. Now Claire's and Chris's pods disappear into the floor. The second dog races toward Alice, who shields her face from showering glass. The canine leaps at her, and she sidekicks a large fallen shard. It sails across the room at us, then slices fatally into the zombie dog, which falls limply to the floor. Now Alice turns and sees Bennett charging. She raises an arm to block him, and he plunges a knife through her forearm. Behind her, fanged tentacles emerge from Wesker's mouth. As he approaches, she pulls the knife from her arm and jabs it into his forehead. The tentacles retract. Bennett reaches for a gun on the floor.
don't even think about it.
He freezes. As Wesker removes the knife from his head, Bennett reaches for the gun again. Kmart grabs it first.
Who the fuck are you?
She pistol whips him. Meanwhile, Wesker opens his mouth and his tentacles reemerge. As they stretch toward Alice, Kmart tosses her the gun. Wesker lunges, his jaws opening at us, but Alice fires into his mouth. The shot bursts out the back of his head as he falls. His tentacles retract, and Wesker lies on his back, his head resting on the octagonal platform. His body twitches, then goes still. Using the tablet, Alice scans the listings until she finds Chris. She selects him, and his pod rises from the floor. She finds Claire and selects her pod as well. As it rises, Chris, now freed, moves beside it and touches the clear wall. His sister pushes against the container. Nearby, Wesker stirs. Alice's jaw drops as he sits up. Chris pushes him back down with his foot.
I don't think so.
He takes a step back. In unison, he and his sister raise their guns and fire. As they shoot relentlessly, their hard eyes focused on Wesker, an aerial view shows the man's body twitching. Our view pulls further away from the white floor, fade to white. Now doors seal Bennett in the medical bay.
Don't you shoot him! I'm a producer!
The others stroll away.
Open those doors! You are gonna deal with some serious consequences, you motherfuckers!
Chris shoots the intercom. In the medical bay, Bennett still uses it.
You're gonna live to regret this, all of you!
Bennett turns around, lips parted. He stares fearfully.
Oh, God. Just wanna go home.
We see the other side of the doors. Now, Umbrella captives emerge from their pods.
Hey. Gonna be okay.
Claire gawks toward the hangar. She draws her gun.
No.
Chris, Alice!
She reaches the hangar just as a Fletner zooms down a launch track and soars out of the ship. Chris joins her and they fire at the escaping aircraft. Alice races up behind them. In the Fletner's cockpit, Wesker, now healed, snares. His head jerks and he sucks in a breath. Back in the hangar.
Come on!
Alice leads the Redfields away. In the Fletner, Wesker enters a password on a remote. The screen reads, Purge Facility. He smirks. On the ship, Alice, Claire, and Chris sprint into a cargo hold. On board the Fletner, Wesker's smile fades as he looks around. He rises and moves to his supply shelf. Finds the radioactive device hidden behind several Umbrella-branded duffel bags. A clock on it counts down. On the Arcadia, the device's case sits empty. Wesker's eyes glow red as the clock hits zero. A pulse of light consumes the Fletner, filling the sky with a brilliant glow. Claire, Alice, and Chris watch from the ship.
I didn't want you to miss that.
They grin up at the sky. Now, the view from inside a storm drain tunnel shows its circular opening to the outside world. With a gun in each hand, Luther stumbles toward it. Two zombies advance behind him. He turns and shoots. They drop, and Luther jerks his guns at them.
That's right! Star power, bitches!
He glares. In an aerial view of the Arcadia, hundreds of freed Umbrella captives, still clad in white, walk the ship's top deck. Claire watches from a window in the bridge.
It's a miracle.
She faces Alice and Chris.
I never dreamed there would be this many of us left alive.
Alice nods. Chris squeezes Claire's shoulder.
So what's next?
He tilts his head at Alice. She shoots him a thoughtful glance, then turns on a speaker.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency.
She turns it off and picks up a radio mic.
I say, we live up to the promise.
She uses the mic.
This is Arcadia, broadcasting on the emergency frequency. Location 118.30 degrees west.
On deck, Kmart and the other humans hear the transmission.
There is no infection. Repeat, there is no infection. We offer safety and security, food and shelter. If you are out there, we will help you. There is hope.
With a smile, Alice lowers the mic and looks out the window. Meanwhile, Luther eyes his surroundings from the storm drain pipe. A fleet of Flettners soars overhead. Inside one craft, armed Umbrella Commandos sit clad in tactical gear and black face masks. On the Arcadia, Claire, Alice, Kmart, and Chris see the incoming fleet.
What is that?
Trouble.
Our view pulls away from the four survivors, widening to show the entire ship. We withdraw farther and farther from the ship. Flettners close in on the Arcadia, swooping in one after another from over our shoulders and from under our feet. Our view jostles as they pass us, their engine exhaust hazing the air. The arriving airships increase in number until the fleet resembles a swarm of wasps headed for the lone ship. Cut to black. Credits roll. Unit Production Manager R.J. Gilbert. First Assistant Director Jeff Authors. Second Assistant Director Penny Charter. Cast: Mila Jovovich as Alice, Allie Larder as Claire Redfield, Kim Coates as Bennett, Sean Roberts as Albert Wesker, Sergio Perez-Mencheta as Angel, Spencer Locke as Kmart, Boris Kojo as Luther, Wentworth Miller as Chris Redfield, Sienna Guillory as Jill Valentine, Casey Barnfield as Crystal Waters, Norman Young as Kim Yong, Fulvio Cicere as Wendell, Ray Olubowale is Axeman. Now in a Flettner, a shapely female commander paces.
Information. Take no prisoners and shoot to kill.
It's Jill Valentine.
Numbers are unknown, but will include Umbrella fugitives and prime targets. Claire Redfield, Chris Redfield, and Project Alice.
She wears a robotic spider.
So people, whatever's waiting for you out there, just know one thing. You are gonna be in for the fight of your lives.
The spider's crimson glow pulsates. Credits continue. Fulvio Cicere as Wendell. Ray Olubowale as Axeman. Christopher Kano as Sniper Number 1. Tetsuya Goke as Sniper Number 2. Nobuya Shimamoto as Technician Number 1. Peter Kosaka as Duty Officer. Dennis Akiyama as Captain Hotaka. Kenta Tomioki as Technician Number 2. Shin Kawai as Umbrella Sergeant. Mika Nakashima as J-Pop Girl. Takato Yamashita as Businessman, Stunt. Hiromi Okayama as Kogel Girl Undead, Stunt. Cam Harrod as Aerial Coordinator. Martin Metis as Alice Flying Double. David Tomasini as Helicopter Pilot. Stunt Coordinator Rick Forsaith. Stunt Rigging Coordinator David Harcourt. Key Stunt Rigger Rick Scott. Art Director Brandy Gordon. First Assistant Art Director Colin Woods. Graphic Designer John Hunter. Set Designer William Chang. Soren Popescu. Tucker Doherty. Vlad Fedorov. Second Assistant Art Director Tanya McGowan. Illustrator Rob Ballantyne. Rob McCallum. Bartol Regulik. Art Department Coordinator Woody Brown. Art Department Apprentice Eugenie Lau. SPFX Coordinator Tony Kenny. SPFX Supervisor Mark Lawton. On set SPFX Kaz Kobielski. Rigging Key Gary Kleinstuber. Shop Key Chris Aslin. Shop Assistant Ian Locke. First Assistant SPFX Michael Inanen. SPFX Technicians Drew Longlin, Sam Mudjkinovic. SPFX Laborers Hudson Kenny, J. Raymond Kenny. SPFX Administrator Jill Aslin. Key Set Decorator Cal Laux. Lead Man Number 1 Jeffrey A. Melvin. Lead Man Number 2 Carlos Caneca. Set Deck Buyers Avril Dishaw, Alexandra Alex Hooper. On Set Dresser Lisa Dietrich, Gary Kane. Property Master Tori Bellingham. Assistant Property Master Jeff Polis. Props by Teresa Buckley. On Set Property Assistant Tanya Wilkinson. Head Armorer Charles Taylor. Armorer Al Verklian. Construction Coordinators Philip Telez. Head Carpenter Jim O'Donohue. Head Carpenter Aircrafts Tony Parkin. Assistant Head Carpenter Aircrafts Paul Messina. Assistant Head Carpenter Ming Yi. Construction Tracker Darlene Abbott. Key Metal Fabricator Welder Alex Telnow. Fabricator Welders Paul Hanneken, Francis Livingston, David Telez. Onset Carpenter Chuck Loriot. Key Green Man Jim Peters. Lead Greens Barbara Wallace. Mila Jovovich's costume by Jovovich Hawk and Denise Cronenberg. Costume Designer Arthur Rosal. Assistant to Costume Designer Richard Krogh. Set supervisor Wayne Godfrey. Truck supervisor Jerry Gillen. Costume buyer Leonie Reed. Breakdown artist Rebecca Vile. Costume assistant Stacia Bond. Head of department, makeup, Leslie A. Siebert. Makeup artist to Ms. Jovovich and Ms. Larter, Christina Smith. Key makeup artist, Joanne McNeil. Assistant makeup artist, Burton LeBlanc. Contact lens specialist, Mandy Ketchison. On-set prosthetic supervisor, Sean Sampson. Key prosthetic artists, Kyle Glencross, Iantha Goldberg, Jason Detheridge. Creature shop supervisor, Steve Newburn. Undead trainees, Taylor James, Shannon Elizabeth Rowe, Paige Bondi, Taylor Byers, Cameron Scholes, Ryan Luwagi. Supervising sound editor, Stephen Barden, MPSE. Dialogue ADR editor, Jill Purdy, MPSE. Sound effects editor, Alex Bullock. First assistant sound editor, Rose Gregoris. Second assistant sound editor, Tyler Witham. Music editor, Kevin Banks, MPSE. Additional guitar, Irvin Toussaint. Mixed at Deluxe Post-Production, Toronto. Sound re-recording engineers, Andrew Sturck, Andrew Tay, Mark Zifkovitz. Sound re-recording assistant, Jamie Gould, Jason Pereira. Foley artist, Steve Bain. Foley recordist, Peter Purceau. Foley assistant, Gina Wark. ADR recordist, Matthew McKenzie. Optical recordist, Finlay Braithwaite. Project manager, re-recording operations, Michael Patterson. Digital visual effects by Mr. X Incorporated. Additional digital visual effects by Rodeo FX. Additional digital visual effects by Rocket Science VFX. Additional digital visual effects by Anna Brain. Alaska LA Aerial Unit. Unit Manager Robin Mouncey. Aerial Plate Unit Production Manager Patrick Newall. Aerial Plate Unit Production Supervisor Ralph Weinfurtner. The characters and incidents portrayed and names used herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character, or history of any person is entirely coincidental and unintentional. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Copyright 2010, Davis Films, Impact Pictures Incorporated, Constantine Film International GmbH. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. Read by Miles Neff. For more information about motion picture access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. Logos, Capcom, Davis Films Impact Canada, Sony Make Believe, Constantine Film, Screen Gems, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company.
Hey boys, is that any way to treat a lady?